Hello, everybody, and welcome to the War Room. This one is for the UFC 267 co-main event, Peter Yan against Corey Sandhagen for the interim bantamweight title. Okay, so on one side, we've got Peter Yan, the former champion. He's got that tight range boxing style where he walks people down and he's quite happy to switch his stance. He's very ambidextrous. He can work the same shots off both sides and he has the same patterns on both sides, which just shows you how good his training is. And what Peter Yan's going to want to do is push Corey Sandhagen back against the fence where he can then start setting him up for some of these more powerful shots as he scoots off left or right. If he clinches, of course, then Peter Yan's got a lot of clinch work that he's very good with, foot sweeps and trips and stuff, but very good with head position and overhooks and underhooks, which I'll show you in a minute. On the flip side, Corey Sandhagen, he's light on his toes and he's moving and drifting and stinging from the outside, but has a whole variety of different things in his arsenal that he can throw at his opponents. Doesn't generally work takedowns. He did a little bit in his earlier career before he came to the UFC, but generally what you'll see from Corey Sandhagen is a willingness to go to the ground if his opponent starts the attack and then immediately reverses on them to try and attack with submissions. He's very much a flow state fighter, very kind of tests and teasers and pokes and prods at his opponent to see where the holes in their guard are so he can then start setting them up for the power shots. Peter Yan does something very similar, but with just more with forward pressure. Let's have a quick tale of the tape. So 15-2 for Peter Yan, 14-3 for Corey Sandhagen. 7 knockouts on Peter Yan's record, 6 for Corey. Only 1 guillotine on Peter Yan's record. He's not much for submissions. Corey's got a couple of submissions. He's got armbar, triangle, and a rear naked choke. But he's, again, it's not the priority of his game, but he has that there if he needs it. Height and reach advantage both sit on Corey Sandhagen's side, 5'11" with a 3-inch reach advantage. The only other thing I really want to talk about is on UFC stats, they're both listed as switch stance fighters. And I want to make the distinction between the two because they both fight out of both stances, but the difference is the fluidity of which they change. So on one side you've got Peter Yan, who he'll be orthodox, and then he'll switch to southpaw, and he'll stay here for a minute, and then he'll switch through back to orthodox. But there are moments where he's committed to that stance. For me, Corey never commits to a stance. He's always changing from one to the next. I would never say he's orthodox for long enough to be committed to that stance before he's switching again. His feet are almost autonomous, like they're working on their own. And of course, he talks about Dominic Cruz being a big influence of his. You can certainly see that influence, but I would actually say Corey's starting to level up the footwork, in my opinion. I think we saw that in the Dillashaw fight. We've seen it all the way through his career, pretty much, to be honest. But I think we saw it really well in the Dillashaw fight. You'll also see it defensively in the John Lineker fight as well. But very good at moving lightly on his toes. Very good at peppering people as they come in. Okay. Let me show you some clips. So what I like about both of these guys is that they were both very refined when they arrived in the UFC. So Peter Yan is a master of sports in boxing, and you can see that in his style. Now, he's very good at switching his stance and moving through range to attack. But really what he wants to do, he wants to have his opponent backed up against the fence where he can start pressuring them, you know, where they've got a few options to move. But you can see how slick his footwork is out in the open here. I mean, he's not there to be hit all the time, but you can always feel that pressure, or at least his opponent can always feel that pressure. Now, one thing I did want to point out, because we've seen Corey expose people with this in the past, you'll see Peter do this a lot of the time. He swipes and he pulls his opponent's kicks out of the way. Marlon Moraes learned that was a very risky thing to do against Corey, because, like I said, he'll read the habit and he'll switch it up and he'll attack the open target. The benefit to Peter Yan's style is that it makes his opponents feel exhausted because he's always moving forward. But the downside is that he's always in range. So it's less about being elusive and more about being defensive. So he has to have good reactions for defense. He does move out the way of some stuff, but I would say 70% of the stuff that's thrown at him is there ready to receive it, to sweep it, to slip it or cover from it. if he's covering from it, then those blocks are going to start to become predictable, and that's where Corey starts to set people up. Just something I wanted to point out. But generally, he's very good. He's got very smooth footwork. And him switching through stances allows him to do these kind of things where he rocks from one stance to the next. Like I said, comfortable from both stances, but tends to switch his stance. So you can see here he's orthodox. Tends to switch his stance when he steps through to punch. So what you'll see here, look, he's going to step with a big long left hook that sets up the overhand right. Now the overhand right's covered by his opponent, so he fires an immediate cross from a southpaw stance with his left hand, and then he's stepping again, back to orthodox. Then he's going to throw a kick to the body, and then he's going to throw that lead hook again, forcing his opponent to move this direction towards the power punch that he's throwing, and swings it right across, right over the side, crack. And you'll see something, talking about ambidexterity, you'll see something very similar in the Jimmy Rivera fight, where he does the same thing. You're going to see him step through. So he's going to fire this right hand over the top. Jimmy Rivera is going to move back away from him, and Peter Yan's going to follow him with this step. Here we go. So, and you like look at that tight high guard that Peter Yan's got as well. Lead hands out, reaching. Like that's his skirmisher. That's the thing that he's testing them with. And he'll switch sides and he'll do it with the other hand. But then look at that. Swings that big left hook out to the side to get Jimmy Rivera moving. Knows full well he can't reach him because his hand's open, look. Then he's going to swing that right hand over the top. As he's throwing the right hand, though, look at the back foot. Look how the back foot's traveling forward. Travels and lands, and then he switches his head across the center line. So that little rock just there, it goes across here. And he pulls the weight, leans onto his lead leg, and pulls the weight into his fist. It's literally the same punch, but just in a different circumstance. Just in a different stance, I mean. Bang, look at that. And here we are from the backside. So like I said, like he arrived in the UFC as a very polished version of himself already. And the fact that he has these patterns on both sides means that it's very difficult to keep up with him setting these traps for you. Wings that around the side. Lovely. Really nice. Okay. And then we go back to same thing again. Pressuring his opponent, pushing him back. This was his last fight before he signed with the UFC. So that same opportunity is presenting itself again. Look, fires the left, steps through, throws the right over the top. Because now neither of those has landed, his opponent's backing up to the fence, he then comes with the short uppercut on the inside, and that's what hurts him, that short left uppercut. Now, we've actually done a breakdown of this before. I actually watched it last night, Jamie, to research. I talked about this before because you can see this style of boxing with a few different guys. Like Gennady Golovkin uses this very well. You'll see Kovalev do it sometimes as well. Like their willingness to step through to land the next punch. To you know, so they're not stepping in the same stance and then reaching and overextending themselves. They'll throw that power punch and then that then becomes their lead hand for the next power punch coming off the opposite side. What he starts off with is a catch and shift, but then he switches it to more of a Fitzsimmons because he comes up on the inside. These are old boxers that used to use these footworks. So the catch and shift is this part where he's going to throw the power punch and then step through and throw another power punch. But with a catch and shift, this second power punch would land. Whereas in this scenario, he goes catch and shift to then step through to southpaw and frames on the inside, squares his stance up and comes up the center with the uppercut. Like it's the same with Corey in a lot of ways. Like the fluidity of his stance is very much, it's autonomous. And he's thinking about his opponent. He's thinking about his weapons. He's thinking about what he can strike with. The only point of difference really, I would say, is that Corey moves more. He's more fluid, which means his stance changes more. And because he's more active with his striking, because he throws sort of 30-40% strikes just to kind of see where his opponent's reactions are at, he tends to switch stance a lot more. Whereas Peter's got that nice, calm, stoic, walk you down and back you up against the fence with just the anxiety that something's coming. let's have a quick look at Corey. So again, very, very similar version of himself to the one that arrived in the UFC. Like, watch his footwork here. Like, that's a switch stance there, which most people would not even pay attention to. But he's going to step forward, orthodox, jabs, tries to throw the right hand, but doesn't work, and jogs out. And now he's in a southpaw stance. Like, there's a lot of this in his game, and it's so effortless for him. It's so effortless for him. Look at that, just moves away. And you know, something we saw in the Dillashaw fight is how good he is at drifting away and then stomping that back foot in and tagging them down the pipe. So, like, he's catching people when they're overcommitting. Like, you've got to think, if Peter Yan's crashing forward and trying to land shots, Corey, with his height and reach advantage, might be able to move back and move away and be able to catch him on the way in. And this is another thing I wanted to show you, because, of course, we saw it in the Frankie Edgar fight, but his flying knees are consistent all the way through his career. This is, of course, before he was in the UFC. And look at this flying knee. Comes straight up the center and doesn't quite land. But it's a good part of his arsenal, and it's something that we've seen consistently within the UFC. You know, he did it to Dillashaw. He did it to Sun Tsao. Obviously knocked out Frankie Edgar with it. He did it to John Lineker a couple of times, but you might as well just near brick wall. It just kind of bounces off him. But again, it's consistent because he's confident not only that he can read his opponent and see when their heads dip in and when he can catch them with it, but he's also happy to just kind of go wherever the fight goes, just flow through to the next position. Like, he does get caught and he does get taken down from these, like he did against Dillashaw, flying through the air, gets caught in midair. There's that tagging. You'll see in a second he did it against Dillashaw. Like, watch this. The opponent's moving forward, confident. Now he feels like he's missed the shot, and Corey's on his closed side. The reason I call it his closed side is because there's his front foot. So anything on this side here is his closed side. The open side would be the side where his hips are facing, which is obviously the opposite side, this side here, if that makes sense. So as Corey jogs out here, he circles himself to the closed side, so he's got that shoulder exposed and then comes straight over the top with that right hand. Now you'll see the same thing here as Dillashaw's rushing forward, crashing forward. He posts out with that lead hand. He's just out of reach, gets kind of clipped with that. And Dillashaw runs, couple of shots miss, and then watch this. Settles. Bang. Bang. it's like you chase him down and you think, oh, I've missed him. And then he jumps on you. Like, Peter Yan is excellent, of course, at covering distance and wading through space with power punches. But there is a point where if he misses two or three or four, he might stop. And at the point where he stops, that's where Sanhagen goes back into range, pat, pat, tags him on the chin. Like, these are legitimate issues that Peter Yan might have if he's not able to trap Sanhagen against the fence. Because, of course, that's the ideal case scenario for him. He wants to trap him in that space against the fence where, what are your options? You're either going to move forward into a clinch, which I'll show you in a minute, you probably don't want to do. You can either move left or right, which means I've got a counter for either way, and I'm going to decide which way you're going to go. Or you can level change, and again, I've got great wrestling, so, you know, not me, Peter Yan. Like, it forces you into decision-making. It's like, well, you've got to choose. Gun to your head, choose. Left or right, up or down, which way do you want to go? Because I've got an answer for everything. Corey out in space where he's moving around and forcing Peter Yan to chase after him, he's able to find these angles and he's able to catch him when he's dipping his head and fire that knee up the center line or that counter right. Or even, you know, a bit later in the fight, maybe if he's got some breathing room, we'll see him start setting up things with those body kicks like he did against Moraes. There's a lot of depth to Corey Sandhagen's game, but he does need a bit of space to use it. Where are we next? So we're back to this fight before he was in the UFC. I tried to find a clip of this in his UFC career. There's a couple of times when he uses a decent little uppercut, but it's not like this. Like, this is he's setting him up here to land this uppercut cleanly. And I do feel like there's opportunity to land uppercuts on Peter Yan for him as well, because that channel for the knee might be there. So it's the same channel for the uppercut, obviously in a bit of a tighter space, which he might be in. But look how he moves forward with this. Throws the long slapping left hook over the top and then almost as if he's reaching for the knee look. So what he's feinting to his opponent, you'll see this hand is moving down towards that knee, like he's reaching as if he's going to try and take his opponent down. And as he's doing it, he comes straight up the center with an uppercut. Like, he even touches the knee, look. Like, you can see his hand in contact with the knee there. Touches the knee and then comes straight up the center. Like, loose and fluid and difficult to read and tricky and long range. Happy to switch stance and works the body like a beast as well. And this is another thing that you've got to think about in the long run. Oh, that reminds me. See, I build these playlists to remind myself of things, knowing full well I'm going to forget. First of all, neither of these guys really react very well to low kicks, or at least in the past have struggled with low kicks. So the one of these two guys that takes a hold of that range of the game might have a lot of success in the long run. The other thing, both guys do it, but Corey has got a wicked left hook, and he digs it right into that liver, right into the floating rib. And the amount of people that he catches with, and you just see their body cave and wince. Like, this was before his UFC career, so he's going to land a nice chopping low kick here as his opponent circles away from theirs, the left hook to the body. He digs it, but he's out of range, so he follows it with a nice chopping low kick. But now watch. He comes back in, he goes high, and he swings that left hook into the body again. Feint a jab, bam. Oh, that is not nice. That's like where your soul leaves your body. And what you'll see is in his UFC debut against Austin Arnett, watch how he breaks this clinch. And it's not the same combination, but it's the same principle. So what you're going to see is he's going to touch him with a right hand. Look, there's the right hand coming out. The right hand's going to touch his guard, and Austin Arnett's going to bring his hands up. So now this elbow already, ooh, that's a terrible line. This elbow already is here. So there's a big gap. There's a big target right there. Oh, that's the wrong button. I'll master this one day. Damn it. There we go. Oh, still don't want to work. I give up. That's the target. That's the target. But watch what happens as the elbow comes up because of the right hand. That target gets much bigger, much more easier to access, and he bends over and leans, takes that shot right in the midsection. Look at the gap in between his elbows right there. That's where the punch is going, up there and into the solar plexus, because that will knock the life out of you. And that's exactly what happens to Austin Arnett. Bang, and then folds to the floor. And just look how similar it is. This is really nice. Love this punch. Boom, right in the solar plexus. And then there we go. That's his soul leaving his body just there, look. It's horrible. It's horrible, trust me. Fortunately, it never happened to me in a fight, but I've had it a good few times in training. Get forced to take a knee for a moment. Lovely shot. That's a great target for him. Because as I've said before, because Peter Yan does have that high-pressure style where he does want to walk you down and force you into a closer range, he is there to be hit. And with little 4-ounce gloves on, you can't cover everything. And Peter Yan's style of boxing is very much sculpted by his amateur boxing career. Like I said, if you watch any of the Russian amateurs coming through, they've got that kind of style where they're tight and side on, and they pressure, and it's a very high pressure style, high work rate style. And it forces people to do things they don't want to do because, now I've got to hold him off. I've got to keep jabbing. And the person's not thinking about jabbing. They're thinking about keeping him away. But in the process of them throwing that, they're exposing gaps in their guard where these shots start coming over the top. Okay. That's what I was saying. So that's why I think the body shot's a good one, because I think it'll be there. Because you can't cover yourself. And you know, Peter's really good at tucking up here, but there's definitely a target in that midsection, especially if Sanhagen starts getting very good at opening those gates for himself. Okay, Peter Yan at close range is almost as unpleasant as he is at boxing range. In this clinch range here, again, this fight was against Magomed Magomedov. This was for the ACB title, and these two were very, very competitive and evenly matched. If you want to watch a good 25-minute scrap, go and watch this fight. But this is consistent throughout his career as well. And this is part of the reason why he doesn't mind getting tangled up with people at close range, because he knows he's got all these tricks and he can hold his own takedown defense. At 90% takedown defense, you know, it's impressive. Just before I move on, remember what I said about him, him having that tight range boxing style. So you'll see this if you watch any really high level boxers. Canelo's great at it. Cotto's great at it. Anybody that can find those little pockets within the scramble, within the chaos, like when someone throws a left hook and they roll underneath. In these exchanges, of course, in the moment, you may be recognizing that the person's posturing their shoulder to throw that left hook. You may see them start to turn, or they may have a tell on their face and you're like, okay, I know he's going to throw a punch. Of course, in the moment, you are reading those things. But the positions where you put your head or you put your guard is largely down to assumption, right? We're trying to predict what our opponent's going to do. And that's why in these moments of chaos where there's a lot going on, sometimes shots get through because you can't cover everything at once. And some things do start to fall into the responsibility of your subconscious. So like even great fighters, like go and watch Canelo against Golovkin, right? Go watch Canelo against Kovalev, the finishing left hook, because he's doing this to the highest level of boxers in the world. So everyone's susceptible to it. If you can catch Golovkin with this, you can catch anyone. And what's happening is Canelo's hammering the body over and over again. So Golovkin is dropping this elbow to catch that body shot. As he's reacting, he's stopping the punch, of course. But because there are so many other things going on, that now then becomes reactive to the pattern that he sees in front of him of Canelo shifting his weight and posturing to throw a body shot. So then when Canelo sees that Golovkin's starting to fall for this trap and he's fallen into a habit, a pattern, he's being programmed, that's when Golovkin comes up the side and that's when Canelo comes up the side and cracks Golovkin with a shot to the head. Because in high-pressure circumstances, things fall onto our subconscious as a it's my subconscious responsibility to get my hands up, keep my chin down. And some of those things start to slip when you get tired or when you get pressured or when you get hurt. In these moments here where they tie up, Peter Yan is very good at just manipulating people's movement and turning them. He's very good at forcing people to do things they don't want to do. Like, what's this? So this is what I was talking about with people slipping to pockets which are safe, this is where the style of Peter Yan is risky. Because if this straight right here becomes a flying knee, this looks very different. This is what I'm talking about. So in a boxing scenario, that is a perfectly safe place to slip a right hand, because the punch has gone over his shoulder. And in boxing, there's nothing coming up this channel to hit him from there. It's not the same in MMA. And if that straight right becomes a feint to a flying knee, look where Peter Yan's head goes. Like, there's a real risk on that flying knee right there. Something else he's got to watch out for. But as I was saying, this high-pressure style, so in this circumstance against Magomedov, he slips and finds himself clinched. And see, he's got this single necktie. He did exactly the same thing to Uriah Faber. So he's got that hook around the neck here, so he's going to pull this in his direction. At the same time, he's putting this foot across this shin bone here. So he's creating a barrier low down, and he's pulling him over that barrier with his upper body. Watch. Kick and pull. And he off-balances him, and he takes his back. And that's not the only scenario in this fight which he uses it. He uses it over and over again. And you'll see it in the Uriah Faber fight as well. We've not got a great camera angle of it, but you'll see what I'm talking about. Here it is again. Oh, that's a little hip toss here. But then nice knee in the midsection there. These are the moments where, you know, Corey needs to be breaking and clearing. There it is again, look. Pulls him with the underhook. Steps across. Front foot steps. Pulls him down in this direction with the underhook. Brings this foot across to create a barrier. Bang. Really good for keeping the fight moving and making your opponent feel like they're being pushed around. I think there's one more of it here. Takes his back in here, does he? Oh, lovely. Lovely. Look at that. I mean, it's just so smooth and fluid for him. It makes it look easy. And then he's got that oppressive head pressure. And then he's walking you down again. like the mood that you get from Peter Yan's fights is like, look at the time, 15 seconds left in the fifth round. Like he's this bulldog all the way through the fight. It must be exhausting to fight. Corey's got to do something to hold him off. He's got to do something to hurt him or to discourage him, because Corey's got great movement, but doing it for 25 minutes, it does get exhausting. And that's what Peter Yan's going to be relying on to slow him down and get close to him if he's not going to be able to hit him. Just watch. This is the footwork foot sweep I'm telling you about here. So this is in the Faber fight, obviously. And there's the wrap on the back of his neck there. That's the hand which he's going to be pulling him with. And then he's going to look where his feet are and he's going to step. And hang on a minute, where are we? He's going to step and he's going to kick and pull. Lovely. And then obviously after this, he's pulling down on Faber's head, pulling him down so Faber's resisting and pulling back, and that moves him right into the range of the high kick. And honestly, I thought when I first saw this being thrown, I thought he was trying to land the knee, but I've actually seen him throw this a few times now, and he actually does extend the leg. Maybe it's a dual-purpose technique, kind of like the kick that Marlon Moraes landed on Jimmy Rivera and Aljamain Sterling. Same technique, different application. You either eat it at the knee or the foot. It's up to you. But that's just a lovely technique that he used there. And then what you'll see is, you know, there's the other angle. That's where you can see him stepping in and bringing the foot up to kick and pull Faber. It's just, I mean, it's a position in which he can keep people moving. I mean, he was cracking Faber with elbows off it as well. And I think any time he locks up with, because he's going to need an answer if he's going to close him down, right? If Peter Yan's constantly moving forward, there's going to become a point where Corey can't move back and he can't move left or right, or he chooses not to and he steps in. At that point, that's where Peter Yan's going to go for that single necktie and he's going to start trying to manipulate his balance. That's a difficult range for Corey Sandhagen to deal with, in my opinion. And if I was him, I would be either all the way out or completely entangled. Now, Sandhagen is very good at... well, let me explain it a different way. There's something about Sandhagen's game that I really like and really appreciate. And what I recognize about it is that in moments where a fight is going in the direction of one fighter, then all of a sudden something happens, a sweep or a knockdown or whatever, and it immediately starts shifting, going back the opposite way. When that happens, a lot of fighters allow it to go. Even if it's for 45 seconds or something, they allow the fight to drift away before they pull it back. In evenly matched fights, that control, that shift of momentum bounces back and forth either way. What I love about Corey is that he never lets you stall his attack and start your own. As soon as you start an attack, as soon as you try and counter with him, he immediately switches it on you, even if it's something a bit reckless or something that he doesn't really feel necessarily is going to work. He aggressively attacks something which forces his opponent to go from focusing on their own attack to now thinking about defending whatever Corey's throwing at them, which usually allows him to turn the tables and get back at his opponents. He's only got 3 submissions on his record. He's got an armbar, a triangle, and a rear naked choke. The flying knee, as we've talked about, might put him in risky positions on the floor, but he does make the best of bad circumstances. Now, this is actually very similar to the, if you watch the Bautista fight, he sits off for an armbar, but he's controlling that with a Kimura grip. With this one, it's just a regular armbar, and he actually loses his footing as he falls back. But this is what I'm talking about. I mean, this kid, he was all over this kid. Like, he jumped into a flying knee here, and then for the next, what, was that 3 minutes, 2.5 minutes? He's basically all over this guy. They get back up to the feet. He takes him down. He passes his guard. He attacks him with a rear naked choke and with an arm triangle and a couple of other things. He goes for the armbar, falls off and doesn't get it. But look how he creates space for himself. As his hip lands, hips landed, hands landed. Watch what he does here. Because in this scenario, if his opponent keeps traveling up, he's going to end up in bottom guard. But he anticipates and he adapts. Watch. See how he pulls his leg away. We're watching this leg here. That's where it was. And now look how he pulls it out of the way. The reason he does that is because now this foot's clear to come shooting over this shoulder and prepare a triangle, which is exactly what it does. There it is. Knee comes up. Now, the guy does a good job of catching it. Knee comes up, but he manages to clear the hand. Look, you see, it push the hand away there. Pushes the hand away. Brings the foot out. Little adaptations. But if he hadn't have created that space for himself in the first place, it wouldn't have even been an option. He wouldn't have even been able to get his knee up in that position. And this guy does a good job of scrambling up and runs straight into him and wraps that leg to stop the triangle. But still, Corey adapts, throws the leg over, grabs his shin, pulls it into position, and then there's the triangle. And, you know, adapting on the spot, adapting in the moment, as we've talked about, is something that's valuable when you're going to start doing things like spinning back fists and flying knees. Like, this is a good example of a situation that could have potentially been really, you know, well, it could have potentially ended up in a bad position, but he actually turned it on Dillashaw. He comes for this flying knee here, straight up the center, but Dillashaw is doing a good job of smothering it. Now, he takes that knee pretty well, to be honest, but he manages to catch Sanhagen as he's in the air. Now, in the moment where Sanhagen becomes horizontal, he starts immediately thinking about his next attack. So we're talking seconds of difference from the flying knee to the point where he goes, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this hand and I'm going to push down on the back of his head. There it is, look. Pushes down the back of his head, brings this leg over the top, and there's his triangle again. He goes down, he lands, he grabs a hold of TJ Dillashaw's body, and he kicks off the fence, look. And there's his triangle. Like the point, and he didn't get this triangle. The point is that, you know, he doesn't always get these submissions, but the point is that he keeps throwing them at his opponent. And over 25 minutes, something might get through. And even if it doesn't get through, sometimes it will shift the momentum back in his favor and it will force someone to scramble and defend a position. Like, he might jump on a neck, knowing full well that he's not going to get it, but the opponent might react as if it's a danger and then he's reversed the position. There are a lot of circumstances like that. You'll see him get picked up and slammed and immediately he's attacking. And this is just a nice place to finish it, because the reality is, if Peter Yan has his way, he's pushing you back against the fence and he's walking you down and he's using boxing and defensive wrestling. If the fight ends up on the floor, which I don't think Peter Yan's going to want to take it there, because it just gets a bit chaotic. Everywhere it gets a bit chaotic with Corey. It'd be easier to keep him standing against the fence, in my opinion. But if he does take him down, Peter Yan's going to want to be on top. He's going to want to pass the half guard, side control, crucifix, and then elbow him till he's bloody. Corey will happily work in any position that he's in. And he uses Kimura traps a lot to keep fights moving. And I expect him to have to use it sometimes in this fight, because I think there will be moments where Peter Yan might hold him against the fence for a minute. And because of the difference in stature, that arm might be there available for him, because Peter will be the lower fighter. So, you know, fight for head position and legs. But this is just lovely work against Bautista. You can see how he actually starts off with a Kimura trap from mount top. And he has to adapt this position and ends up finishing a lovely armbar. I just wanted to finish on this just so we recognize that there is a real threat. Where is it? There is a real threat to Peter Yan if he's not paying attention and he's just chaotically scrambling into the guard or whatever of Corey Sanhagen. I think he needs to manage and measure this fight very well. And I think if he can do it gradually and take away as much of the octagon as he can slowly, and then start maybe digging to the body and chopping the legs and reading where Sanhagen's moving and what he's doing with his hands as he's slipping and rolling away, then he might start to be able to find ways to catch him as he's doing it. But the reality is, for me, Corey's going to be difficult to pin down. He's going to be on his toes and moving and bouncing and dashing into range and dashing out, and he's got great natural defense as well. He's got good reaction times. And he's also doing the reading. He's just not doing it with the stoic patience that Peter Yan's doing it with. He's doing it with, oh, bang, 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 tap, 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 bang, 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 flying knee, bang, you're out. You know, you just didn't see it coming. Like, they're the things that Corey's so good at. You go back to the Marlon Moraes fight, lands a body kick, lands a front kick to the body, lands a back kick to the body. He sees Marlon Moraes, keeps sweeping this kick out of the way, and he goes high kick, and he breaks his orbital bone, And he immediately goes straight back to the same thing before Moraes is able to correct that mistake, and he catches him with a spinning head kick. Like those in-fight adjustments, just like Peter Yan does, just like he did against Jimmy Rivera, cutting him down and forcing him onto that left hook, that's what makes this such an interesting fight. It's going to be a striking extravaganza, and I genuinely expect it to be one of the best fights of the year. I hope some of that's made sense. Make sure you check out my full breakdown on BT Sport as well. You'll need a VPN if you're not in the UK for it. But get on NordVPN and get that sorted out. I've covered some of similar stuff, but there's a lot more clips in that from the UFC, as you can imagine. So enjoy the fights. I think I've said everything I need to. It's going to be a good one. You know this. I'll see you next time.